Welcome to Job Tales, the show where we find out about various professions from around the world. Each week I speak to a new guest with a very interesting job. I'm Laura Leoncini and today my guest is Ashley Lillis. She's a marine ecologist. Now, when I think of Ashley's job, I imagine someone working in nature, far away from a computer, far away from stress and from a busy city life, living basically the dream, right? So we'll see if this corresponds to the truth. But first, Ashley, I want to welcome you to Job Tales and thank you for being my guest today. First of all, can you please enlighten us on the difference between a marine ecologist and a marine biologist?
Sure. So as a marine ecologist, I study marine habitats and ecosystems. So I'm more interested in communities of organisms rather than a single organism. A marine biologist, though these terms are used differently everywhere and, you know, probably to the public, there's not a big distinction. A marine biologist might study a specific organism, you know, like study whales or study the organismal biology. Whereas I don't really focus on a particular animal and its physiology or anatomy. I study oceans and I have a background more in oceanography and ecology. So studying how the environment and ecosystems interact.
Okay. So are there common studies at the beginning when you do your studies in marine biology?
Yeah, so I guess my academic background, I started as an undergraduate. I did a Bachelor of Science in Canada, where I'm from, and it was a joint degree in oceanography and biology. And so I got a very standard biology kind of background, not specific to marine systems necessarily, but I also studied oceanography, which includes the physical processes of the ocean. So studying the tides and waves and currents and circulation, chemical oceanography, so the seawater chemistry and nutrient chemistry and all of that, and then biological oceanography, which mostly is kind of almost synonymous with marine ecology. It just depends on whether you're studying kind of near shore, coastal environments or open ocean. But yes, so I'd say I started out really broadly. And then to work as a marine ecologist or biologist or scientist in general, it typically takes more graduate studies. So I went on to complete a master's degree, and that's when you more narrow your focus. And within the heading of an oceanographer or a marine biologist or ecologist, you become more specialized. So I could also call myself a soundscape ecologist. I study underwater sounds. Yeah, nice. And also a larval ecologist. So my specialization is in the early life history stages of marine invertebrates. So I've studied different populations, oysters, lobsters, different types of organisms and their ecology and behavior. But yeah, basically as you go on, and I've done a PhD, so to get a doctorate degree, then, you know, you're quite specialized in particular things and can apply that to various research. And that's sort of one standard path to become, you know, a scientist of any type, but especially in marine biology, to be competitive and work in a range of scenarios, having graduate degrees is usually expected.
What was the topic of your thesis, the main, of your PhD?
Yeah, for my PhD, I studied habitat-associated soundscapes. So I studied how the sounds of different environments, say an oyster reef versus a sandy soft bottom versus seagrass, if they have different soundscapes. And so when I talk about a soundscape, I'm referring to all of the sounds associated with a particular location. And that means sounds from animals. So underwater, that's fish and shrimp and crabs are all producing sounds. We're just not usually listening, but very similar to on land, how the crickets and birds and frogs are making sounds, so are animals underwater. And then we've also got physical processes, so waves crashing, currents coming by, interacting with the physical environment of, say, a coral reef. So those combine into a soundscape. And of course, this is the same on land. And so I studied for my PhD how those soundscapes differed between different habitats, because this hadn't been studied in the southeastern United States where I was a PhD student. And I looked at how those soundscapes influenced the recruitment or arrival of baby oysters. So when oysters first are born,
oysters actually born?
Well, they're released from the parent oysters.
Okay.
They swim around in the water column for a few weeks before they attach to the bottom. So during that time, they have to find a good adult habitat, another oyster bed, oyster reef. And so I discovered that one of the ways that they do that is through sound. So the sounds of an oyster reef are very specific compared to a surrounding sand bottom. And part of the attraction is the soundscape.
Wow, fascinating. So you've really narrowed down a lot your, you know, scope of study, because of course, you know, marine. And which brings me to the question, because you also mentioned competition. So is it more likely that you get a job, a specialized job, as you specialize and, you know, narrow really down your specialty? Or is it better to stay a generalist and then try to find a job in the field?
Yeah, I think it really depends. And there's lots of different routes and different types of backgrounds and people working as, you know, what we might blanket say as a marine biologist, right? I mean, some people have no degree. They just, and they're doing maybe more applied work, and we would say they're a marine biologist. I have more of a traditional academic background that is then very suited to working in academia, where it's not as though somebody posts a job and says, oh, we want someone who studies the soundscapes of oyster reefs.
All right. It's very specific.
We want somebody who will create a research program in marine ecology or in biology, you know, and then lots of people apply and they decide. And so that's sort of, you know, a traditional academic in an academic sense. But I will say, you know, I have that background, but I'm now not working in traditional conventional academia. And partly that's, you know, because of how I, the types of things I want to do that aren't as easy or don't happen if you work at just a university. And so I've kind of branched out, but I would also say it's extremely common, you know, if someone goes down the route of getting a PhD, yes, that's highly specialized, but that doesn't mean that you're specializing can only do one thing. The skills that you're gaining through doing a project, you know, a dedicated research project for 4 years or more with many different studies within it, isn't that now you can only, you know, apply that method or do that. It's hopefully you've gained a ton of critical thinking skills, ability to propose research and implement it and analyze it and write papers about it, right? And so those skills can be applied across the board and are what are needed to be competitive, is being able to have, you know, a novel idea and plan and organize, potentially secure funding for that project, and then go out and do it, and then synthesize the data and information, write it, communicate your science in many different ways, and then, you know, start all over again. And so I'd say most people, after they complete their PhD, they've got interests in a bunch of different areas within their kind of field, and then start branching again. It's kind of like an hourglass, right? You go from when you're maybe a young student and you learn about all sorts of things, and then you narrow in your interests and go through graduate school and then have this very narrow focus for a little bit. And then when you complete that, okay, now I can branch out and maybe I'm involved in other projects with people. And of course, like me, a lot of people then decide they don't want to stay in kind of a university or research institute setting, and they go into more applied industry or nonprofit sector and apply those skills, but in different ways. And of course, they can jump off at any stage, you know, like someone might get their bachelor's degree and then be a marine biologist for a conservation organization.
Today, what are you working on?
So today,
how is
like
it?
Literally yeah. Today or just like now? In
not literally today, but like, how have you applied your studies? And because you wanted to have a more of a, being on the field and.
Exactly. So for me, you know, and who knows, I may yet go back into kind of the role I was groomed for, trained for as an academic and become a professor. But at least now in my career, I really want to be doing hands-on work and have shifted outside of, I shifted first from being a postdoctoral researcher at a very excellent research institution. And that was great, what I did after my PhD. And I kind of started many more studies, but I really wasn't keen on just then being stuck in a lab or office and teaching. I really enjoy mentoring, but teaching like a huge lecture, I just not that interested in at the moment.
Not your thing.
So
mm-hmm.
I took a job with a large conservation nonprofit as a program manager, program director. And so that way I was able to apply a lot of those skills I was talking about, just of, you know, organizing the scientific, using the scientific method and trying to apply it directly to, in this case, coral reef conservation and doing studies that support that type of effort.
Yeah.
And I learned so much, and I did that just almost 3 years and then decided it was time to move on because I actually wasn't doing enough research. It was a little bit too much management, but okay. That's an example of the type of job that I was selected for and competitive to get, even though that hadn't been what I was doing. And even during that, you know, I hired a lot of marine biology students or people from different backgrounds that either had, you know, more just a bachelor's degree or, and people who were just skilled in different ways to participate in the program. So, you know, you definitely don't need a PhD to work as a marine biologist, though it's very competitive for sure. Because a lot of people want those jobs where they're like, oh, I get to be a scuba diver for this.
Yeah.
It feels really good. And I'm helping contribute to conservation. But yeah, so I learned so much in that and basically learned I didn't want to work for big nonprofits as well.
Okay. But you do experience that by doing it, right? So
exactly.
You didn't know that before.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and I sensed that it wasn't, you know, I didn't want to do it forever, but it was a good stepping stone to see what it's like outside of the kind of university setting and what else is out there. And I think that's been really important towards what I'm doing now, which is I have a very small organization that's also a nonprofit where I'm doing research in marine ecology and conservation to support NGOs or hands-on conservation. So now I'm kind of combining, I'm working with colleagues who are researchers at universities. You know, my network includes all of those academic scientists as well as small local NGOs around the world. So I've got partner organizations and projects in the Caribbean, where I am now for a few months, and also in East Africa on an island called Zanzibar, and in Southeast Asia, some pilot projects as well. So that was sort of my intention, is to be able to scale down and be really small and lean, to be more mobile, to be able to do things that I found were hard within kind of the standard or traditional systems of having a university where, you know, you have a lot of obligations maybe in your home place that you can't they go into the field, you know, for 2 weeks a year or something, and I'm in the field most of the year.
Okay, that's awesome, because yeah, that's what people think, or I think at least, that when you're a marine ecologist or biologist, that you're a lot on the field, and then you're having, mm-hmm. you know, when you were talking about the scuba diving and being on beautiful islands like Zanzibar or in the Caribbean, you yes. know, we human, you know, human beings and human mortals that are in front of a laptop and working, you know, 8 hours a day in an office, we think of you as the, you know, what the right thing to do in life. And but is it true that you're always out and about, or do you also, you know, work on the computer, or what is the ratio basically? Because there's a lot of myths and maybe misconceptions mm-hmm. about your job as well, besides for the years of course that you spent studying, which was yes. definitely also on the, you know, on papers, computer writing, and etc. So yeah. Yeah. How's your life today?
It's a good question, and definitely a bit. Well, I guess I'll talk about me. I think I'm unusual, but I would say that there's no one like standard marine biologist anyway, right? So
yeah.
I think that's correct. Where anyone looking at going in the field needs to really think about, you know, what elements. You don't become a marine biologist to make money, I should say. And so
okay, so yeah, you forget about the finance a finance yeah. job, or yeah.
I mean, of course you can if you're successful and you work hard, you can make a living at it. It
yeah.
can be that, but you know, you're not, most people aren't driven to be like, oh, I want to be a marine biologist because
I want to be rich.
I'm going to be rich. That's probably why so many children say they want to be marine biologists, and most of them don't become marine biologists. I meet people every day who are like, oh, I wanted to be a marine biologist. I'm like, yeah. And then you probably were like, oh, that's not practical.
okay.
Right? You need to be extremely driven. And then also, you know, there's lots of different ways to do it, as I said. And so, yes, you can, if you are really lucky, maybe, and that's what you want, and you probably, you know, don't need to be rich, you could have a job where you get to be in the water all the time and on remote islands and this and that. But that would be, like, I always recommend to students who are thinking of going further in their academic studies that actually, if you do that, you're less likely to be living the dream life. Okay. So there's kind of this trade-off, I'd say. If you want to get the positions that do potentially have more earning potential and stability, like a professor of marine biology, then you're sacrificing that dream of being underwater all the time. Now, yeah. of course, a lot of professors of marine biology still, like, who run a research program, a research lab, they do get to go more than probably the average person, or as people who are listening to this, they would maybe go into the field like once a year or, you know, or so. But yeah. Now if you maybe just get a bachelor's degree or a master's degree, and then you are kind of more suited to the types of jobs where you're in the field, but there's not a lot of then room for advancement potentially. So I guess that's where I'm saying there's a bit of a trade-off. Now for me, I'm unusual in that I've decided to like reject the standard path and maximize the things that I want to do. Really lucky, I guess, to be able to do that at the moment, at least. I am in the field most of the time, but I'm still, you know, you've got your laptop with you. I think you just work really long hours. So it's still like at best 50-50 and I have on your computer and doing all of that. And then the rest, like 50% maybe on a boat and underwater and directly interacting or being around the marine fauna. And I'd say for a traditional scientist who's maybe working in the lab, I mean, there's plenty of marine biologists that never go to the ocean. I should say that too. There's a lot of people who are working either on, like, you know, global computer modeling projects, or like are 100% on their computer or 100% in the lab. So there might be a marine biologist who studies marine bacteria, and mostly they're in the lab, right?
Yeah.
Or working with a fancy machine to look at nitrogen or, you know, something like this. So I know many, many marine biologists like that. And then there's kind of like a whole mix of the two, you know,
yeah.
kind of extreme ends of it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely it's interesting to listen to you, because it's there's the conception of what the job is about, but also all the hard work and also where you want to go, because it's, you say you're lucky. I think you have made yourself lucky, meaning like you know where you want to go and you make that possible, right? So it's also a matter of when we have choices, then we can take those choices and we need to work for it. It doesn't come for free, and it's not just a matter of luck. Of course, sometimes it's you're in the right place at the right time, but there's effort behind. And so we tend to, in our society, we tend to look at just the top of the iceberg of every job or every activity that we see, and then we say, oh, I want to do that, but then you don't see the hard work that goes with it, or also the hard time sometimes that you have, you know. Is it something that you would recommend to the young listeners today, to your job?
I mean, I think that it takes a certain type of personality and dedication, and I'm sure anyone you talk to who has gone through, you know, achieving a PhD would say that there's certainly a ton of downs in that. Really, really hard. And so it's certainly not for everyone. And of course, it wouldn't be good if everyone just became a marine biologist. So it's good that kids grow up and say, maybe I should be a lawyer or a doctor, or, you know, whatever. But I think if someone's really passionate about science and math, and generally, and can put that into a marine setting, that's how you're going to be most successful. I think one of the other myths or ideas that people have, is maybe like, oh, that sounds fun. And so, like you say, don't really recognize kind of the underpinnings being like just as hard science as any other. Maybe our field sites are more exciting, or like there's definitely the adventure and exploration side of it. And yet you need to be able to really do a ton of serious maths and
math. Okay.
So being prepared for that, I think, is important. Now, of course, that doesn't mean you can't be a marine conservation practitioner or someone who's doing the more hands-on applied work. But if you want to be, you know, what I would consider an actual, like, the marine biologist, which is just like any scientist, you have to do the science. But I think, I mean, what you said about not necessarily seeing the hard work, or, you know, me saying, oh, I'm really lucky, I should actually say I'm privileged to have had the opportunity to work hard on something I'm passionate about, and maybe not had to go on a path that's just focused on, you know, making money per se. And so that's where it's not like I made the luck and took a lot. I've taken a lot of risks, especially recently with, you know, not being within another organization or at a university. And so I would say, you know, a lot of people can't do that, but that doesn't mean that they can't be a cool marine biologist. There are some jobs, but I'm not going to lie to anyone listening and saying like, and there's lots of jobs.
And there's compromises too that you need to make, right, in order to have this job. Do you have some compromises?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's kind of this like trade-offs depending on how you go about it. I think that even for people who maybe are doing more traditional work than I am, and, you know, say at a university and work full-time all year there, they still probably have had to move a lot to get there. So if they, in general, it's best if you do go on from an undergraduate degree and study more, it's good to be mobile because you want to gather more experiences. So, you know, the travel part for me is exciting that I have to move around, but I know that some people that wouldn't be maybe possible with if their family obligations and things like that.
I see.
So I'd say that, and then I mean, any job has stuff that you don't like to do, and admin, paperwork, and that kind of stuff. Permits are hard. Like, if you want to go around the world, it's not always easy to do it. But of course, a lot of people can work just in their backyards and study what's there as well.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ashley, for your really tale of your job and expressing, you know, also I can see the passion. I can feel it in your voice. So you've definitely found your passion and it's great. And I hope that the young listeners today are able to also find inspiration and also a real life story, you know, also what to expect. And I wish you all the best for the next projects of yours.
Thanks so much. It was nice talking to you, Laura.
That was Ashley Lillis, marine ecologist. You will find more episodes on Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast, as well as any of your favorite players. I'm always looking for new guests, so please send me ideas to jobtalespodcast@gmail.com. Otherwise, see you next week for a new episode of Job Tales.